Your sexual orientation can be a factor both in your health and in your health care. Researchers at the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research released a report a couple of weeks ago that finds disparities in health and healthcare access among lesbians, gay men, and bisexuals in California. One example, some LGBT people are less likely to seek healthcare when they need it, even if they have insurance. We have to add at the outset that there really is no T in the research. The surveys predate the collection of data on transgender people. One of the four researchers joins us. Dr. Allison Diamant is an internal medicine specialist and an associate professor at the UCLA Medical School. And in her clinical practice, she also works on issues with the LGBT community and making sure that they have health care. Dr. Diamant, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for your interest in this study and the topic overall.
We couldn't not be interested, and this really goes right up into the line of work that you've been doing for a long time yourself. And as long as you have worked on providing health care to LGBTQ people, were there any particular surprises in the basic findings that it appears that LGBT people are less likely to seek health care when needed?
No, I think both from a researcher perspective and a clinical perspective, sort of one-on-one, and even from my hat as a professor teaching medical students and residents, there's still a lot of issues around significant negative experiences within the healthcare system and discrimination. And even though we know overall for all populations, having health insurance definitely is a facilitator of getting needed health care, it's not the only answer, and it doesn't guarantee it in any way for a number of reasons. Certainly, having insurance and insurance rates has increased for adults in California, including among the LGB population, especially because of the acceptance of same-gender marriage and same-sex marriage. And so that means that legal spouses then are eligible for both employer-based coverage through their spouse, but also may have greater access through the Affordable Care Act to coverage through Medi-Cal or the national program of Medicaid.
I want to get into some of the negative experiences that that are listed by some of the people surveyed here. I do want to back off just a bit, though, and let people know a little more about the center and the research. Can you give us a brief overview of the Center for Health Policy Research?
Absolutely. The Center for Health Policy Research is through the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health and has been in existence for just about almost 20 years. The California Health Interview Survey, which is a population-based survey of non-institutionalized households in California, also has been in existence for almost 20 years, and it provides really exciting data and information. And so the center, many of the people who work there, myself included and many others, use CHIS data, but also use other data sources, work with a number of different agencies locally, statewide, nationally, even internationally. Many of the folks are physicians, but the majority are not. People have PhDs, masters in public health, health policy, and even business, and take on a lot of the really important issues around health policy, insurance, health economics that affect both the local area, the state, the country, and internationally as well.
That CHIS data, the California Health Interview Survey, sounds like quite a gold mine for a researcher.
It is. It's quite extraordinary. There are some limitations, but also because it's been around for almost 20 years now, we can look at changes over time. Certainly, there are limitations where the same question hasn't been asked either repeatedly or in the same way, but it allows us not only to look at adults, but also adolescents and children. And so it provides significant information that really can help craft healthcare policy in California, help assess to some degree the impact of health policy at the local and state level.
And this research, again, called Disparities in Healthcare Access and Health Among Lesbians, Gay Men, and Bisexuals in California. Dr. Allison Diamant is one of the four authors of the work. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions, your observations at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So one of the major overall findings, again, is if you're LGB and need to see a doctor, how likely are you to see one versus a straight person?
Well, certainly, we found that insurance rates while there were some differences by gender, for example, gay men had the highest rates of having health insurance compared to straight and bisexual men. The rates didn't vary that much among women, but the type of insurance that people have vary. And we know that sometimes, for example, having Medi-Cal, again, the national program of Medicaid, can sometimes be a challenge to finding a healthcare provider, a physician or a nurse practitioner who is willing to accept that. Although it also, if somebody were previously uninsured, may help the type of access that somebody needs. We also know that having a usual source of care, so being able to say, oh, I see Dr. So-and-so, or I go to Clinic X on a regular basis, also can really help overall gain necessary health care. And we did find some differences by sexual orientation and gender among people who had a usual source of care. But we definitely found among people who were LGB that they had delayed care. We weren't able to suss out all of the reasons, but we know that insurance and cost were not the underlying causes. So some of the conclusions that we drew are based on other research and other literature that really does document other reasons that people who are LGB, and even though this study didn't focus on transgender individuals, we know that for transgender individuals as well, negative experiences within the healthcare system, issues of discrimination or homophobia, play a significant role in people delaying or not seeking necessary health care.
So does the CHIS information, the California Health Interview Survey, does that come with comments or is it just raw data?
It's I think what you're asking me is people are given options to respond to, but can they give additional comments?
Yeah, do you get verbatims, I guess, from those?
Right. So most of the questions have set answers just to help guide people, you know, to give a sense of what the categories are. But there's always options for comments. Mm-hmm. Part of the challenge, especially looking at the LGB population, is that even though we're talking about, you know, over a 500,000 people who identify as lesbian or gay and over another 500,000 that identify as bisexual, when we're looking at the overall population of California, over 40 million people, that's still a relatively small proportion, and it's challenging sometimes from a statistical, from a research perspective, then to be able to say, you know, even though certain people have responded in a way, whether that is significantly different than the straight population that we're comparing them to. So we do have some comments, but we weren't able to assess all of those and analyze all of those.
All right. The reason I was asking was to find out if how prevalent it seems to be that you're hearing from people that the reason they would delay care is because they have had bad experiences or just don't think their doctor likes them or doesn't think the doctor likes gay people or what might be the more common things that you hear.
Right. And again, that we can't extrapolate directly from this study based on research reviews, other research that we've done. Those are definitely reasons that people continue to comment on it, not just from 10, 20, or 30 years ago.
Okay, and now some of the interesting splits within subgroups here. Bisexual men, it seems like, are the least likely to go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Again, I don't think we can say that they're least likely to go to the doctor. They're more likely not to go to the doctor when needed.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's a slight difference in terminology. Some of it may be due to, and we didn't break the analyses out this way, but people who are bisexual tend to be younger. That's not, again, it's not a generalization that nobody who's over the age of 40 or 50 or 60 is bisexual, but when we look at the underlying population or sociodemographic characteristics, people who are bisexual tend to be younger. In general, we know that younger men tend not to go to the doctor irrespective of sexual orientation, or they're less likely to go. We also know that bisexual men had lower rates of health insurance, and we know that they had overall lower income levels, and all of those things can come into play. And just to go back a little bit, the experiences that LGB individuals have in the healthcare setting is not always discrimination, but it can be a lack of knowledge and information. And so I've anecdotally had patients tell me, it's not that my doctor was mean or discriminatory or homophobic, they just didn't know where I was coming from. That's sort of a direct quote from a patient last week. And so people often want to find somebody that they feel comfortable with who can relate to who they are, or at least somebody who can be open to understanding. And we are trying to do a lot with our healthcare trainees talking about cultural competency and cultural respectiveness to ensure that people who do need to get healthcare find a welcome environment where they can get high-quality care that they need anytime that they need, and they're not relying on emergency departments, for example, for non-emergent reasons.
Dr. Allison Diamant is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is an internal medicine specialist in clinical practice, also an associate professor at the UCLA Medical School, and one of the four researchers who authored a recent report on disparities in healthcare access and health among lesbians, gay men, and bisexuals in California, released from UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, with some perceptions on the findings or some questions for the doctor. Also, you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. One of the things that is really interesting in here is that gay men showed up in this report as relatively healthy, as opposed to, for example, straight men and obesity. Very different outcomes there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we did find this very interesting. I will, again, the caveat is we didn't ask about all medical conditions. So there are many other things we could have asked about, and we specifically were either limited by what we were asking, or we wanted to focus on non-HIV or AIDS-related issues because there are huge population issues that go into aging and our behaviors, and so things around what we eat, whether we're physically active, what the rates of obesity are in terms of having an effect on the risk for diabetes and hypertension and heart disease and things like that. And so we did find that gay men were more active in terms of just asking about walking, that they were less likely to consume fast food. They were less likely to consume sugary drinks than straight men or bisexual men as well.
There are a couple of things about the timing of the data that you're working with here that make me wonder if we might have already been in the process of a change,
mm-hmm.
And that is that the survey results end at 2014, is that right?
Yes. So the survey is done in a rolling cycle over 2 years, so there's always a little bit of a delay, and we also started working on this project a couple of years ago, and the policy brief is coming out right now. But you're right, there are often temporal or things that change over time that may lag a little bit in what we're seeing. What's not in the brief right now was we looked back at changes over time as well. And overall, for example, there's a significant decrease in smoking rates among Californians. The rates of smoking are still higher among lesbian and bisexual women than straight women, but they're much lower than they were 20 years ago or 15 years ago. And so we have seen some improvements in those areas where obesity rates, unfortunately, have risen.
There are two trends, though, that really wouldn't be reflected in here. And since the results ended 2014, that was just the first year of Obamacare. And that, of mm-hmm. course, was a year before the Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if there's any evidence, and this might be more anecdotal from your clinical practice, that the numbers might have moved a bit since the period covered by the data.
In terms of having health insurance, and there was a policy brief that came out from the center showing that there was an increase in health insurance coverage among LGB populations since legalization of same-sex marriage. And with ACA overall in California, we've seen huge improvements in rates. The real question I think you're asking is whether those improvements disproportionately improved or didn't improve among the LGB population. And that I can't answer right now, but as soon as we finish analyzing the more recent data, I'll be able to share that with you.
Okay, we'll come back to you for that one in a year or two, it sounds like. So let's talk about this study, though, and what, for example, there's two communities that can do something here, the LGBTQ community and the healthcare community. Let's start with the healthcare community and what they should do with the findings you've presented here.
Absolutely. And I think some of this is already ongoing. There are a number of national and state and local initiatives. I know UCLA has a big committee on LGBTQ equitable care, and that's focusing on improving the training for healthcare providers, doctors, residents, fellows, medical students, around culturally competent, knowledgeable, appropriate, respectful care for LGBT individuals. From a sort of healthcare perspective, ensuring that healthcare systems provide a non-discriminatory environment, but also are collecting information, you know, not just on men and women or based on age or race, ethnicity, or type of insurance, but also on sexual orientation and gender identity, so that we can look for any disparities that exist and do something about and try and eradicate. So at the local, the state, and the national level, that's really important. Reaching out into communities, into LGBT communities, and explaining or advertising and documenting how systems of care have improved and are not accepting of discriminatory treatment or behavior by providers. Being able to offer people who call in and say, you know, I want an LGBT competent provider, somebody who is sensitive and knowledgeable and with lots of experience, and not having to jump through a lot of hoops, being able to look at a website for UCLA or Kaiser or Cedars or any of the large health systems and find a provider that they think would be a good match. Those are some of the things that we can certainly start with. Trying to eradicate some of the social mores, like homophobia in general, along with any other discriminatory behavior. I think that's a really important social issue that we need to continue moving forward on.
There was a lot to take in this report. It is called, again, Disparities in Healthcare Access and Health Among Lesbians, Gay Men, and Bisexuals in California. The work of four researchers, Joelle Wolstein, Shanna Charles, Susan Baby, and Allison Diamant, who is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is an associate professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine and Health Services Research at the UCLA School of Medicine, and also is in clinical practice in Santa Monica. Dr. Diamant, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your interest.
Sure. Look forward to hearing more reports down the road. Dr. Allison Diamant at UCLA.